This is Digital Story Podcast number 562, December 13th, 2016. Today's theme is My Best and Worst Decisions in 2016. I'm Derek Story. There are no cookbooks for entrepreneurs. Our recipes for survival consist of a mixture of ideas, guesses, bandwidth, finances, and luck. Over a 12-month period, I typically have two bad ideas to every good one. And that's a good year. So here's how I fared in 2016. 2016. Yeah, it was a challenge on many fronts, wasn't it? In addition to our cultural turmoil, business was nearly as volatile. I pride myself in being a little bit ahead of the curve, right? And reinventing myself before disaster actually hits. So I had already started working on some projects to shore up, you know, these changes, as I'll say. They were just changes. But like the Titanic itself, sometimes it takes a little bit of time to turn these things around. So what I thought I'd do is do a brief review, because a lot of these involve you, right? Do a brief review of my good ideas and then the things that didn't work out quite so well, all of which you were subjected to one way or another, okay? Let's start out with a good idea. The film camera shop on Etsy. This was definitely a good idea. You know, it's funny how this came about. I hadn't planned on being a retailer of used analog camera gear. That was never in my long-range forecast. But when I started the film project back in December of last year, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do was use a variety of cameras. And, you know, when the book comes out, which will be in 2017, I didn't want it to be, you know, just all one film camera. I wanted it to be, you know, Contaxes and Pentaxes and Yashicas, you know, Olympus, you know, some of the cameras that I just think are really terrific film cameras. So I would find deals on these cameras best that I could, use them, shoot a couple rolls of film, use them on a project, and then, you know, use a different camera and really try to get a broad experience of, you know, what's available right now in the analog world and, you know, how it is to shoot with these different devices, these different cameras. The problem is when you do that, of course, I don't need all these cameras all the time. And they literally started to fill up my studio. So I said, okay, I've got to move some of these along. So I've already cleaned them. I've already repaired them. They've already been tested. They've already had rolls of film gone through them and they've come back from the lab. So I know these are, you know, in good shape. So that's what led to opening the film camera shop on Etsy so that I could sell the cameras that I've already used for the film project, move them through, and then that would give me some funding to get different cameras to test for the project and kind of keep the whole thing going. You know, my view was to have this sort of self-funded project. Now, at this point, I will be honest with you, I'm not anywhere close to self-funding, but it has made the project more manageable. I've had to invest less now thanks to having the film camera shop. Plus, the part I didn't anticipate was how fun it is to refurbish these cameras, to shoot with them, and then to pass them along to someone that's going to have fun with them also. So I really like it. The camera shop is doing very well. And if you haven't been there yet, you should take a look. It's called The Film Camera Shop, and it's on Etsy. I love working with Etsy. They're very together. It's a terrific facilitator for online retailers, and everything about it is top drawer all the way through. So that was a good idea. And, you know, probably one of the crown jewels of my good idea in this category was coming up with the analog clock for the cameras that I couldn't repair, not all the way. And what I mean by that, I could get them mechanically working, but a lot of times, especially with the old Pentaxes, the meters just aren't accurate, or they're just all over the map, or you just really can't tell what they're doing. So I really couldn't sell those cameras in the film camera shop. Someone had told me when I bought it from them, the camera's in great shape. Oh, it's in beautiful shape. Well, yeah, except that the meter isn't working right. So then that's when I came up with the analog clock so that those cameras would be able to find a home too. And that has worked out fantastic also. It's just a wonderful place for, you know, taking these things that aren't being used and shining them up and putting them back to work. And I love stuff like that. Okay, now, the bad idea. The bad idea was the Nimble Photographer One Day Workshop. And, I was kind of surprised by this. So the story on that is that in June, with the Out of Chicago conference, the Nimble Photographer Workshop went great. We had two of them. We did them back to back. They filled up, the people loved them, there was good buzz around them, the whole deal. And I go, wouldn't it be great if I could take these one-day workshops on the road and go places that I normally can't get to with the workshops that I do through the digital story? And, I would partner with somebody in, you know, whatever city, let's just say Omaha right now, partner with somebody, use the local camera store to promote it and hopefully have the workshop there and, you know, just really make it a nice community thing. So we tried it. We tried it once in Portland, and because I thought Portland was really my best shot. It had a fantastic camera store there and seemed like a good photography community. And the thing that I learned that I knew it, but I didn't think it would play out quite this way. The thing that I learned is that if it isn't your workshop, if it isn't your thing, if it isn't your deal, then other people just don't care as much about it as you do. And I mean the people I was trying to partner with. So, for example, we got down to where it was a month out from the workshop and my partner hadn't even started promoting it yet. And I was going, you know, usually with a digital story, I have people signing up, you know, 3-4 months out ahead of time, and they know about the workshops well before that. My partner wasn't even spreading the word about the workshop. We even tested it with one of our TDS members who was trying to help out, where he went into the camera store and asked about the workshop and nobody knew about it. And this was, you know, what, 5 weeks out. I ended up having to just scrap the thing because my experience is that these things don't come off on the last minute. Now, if I was Tom Cruise, yes, I could probably pull it off on the last minute and it would fill up. But I'm not. I'm not Tom Cruise. And you and I both know that. What I learned on this, the lesson learned, is that I have a formula for successful workshops, which means that I oversee every detail of the workshop. Leah and I, you know, are very hands-on, and we just make sure that everything happens. And that if I'm in a scenario, unless it has a really good partner, such as the folks out of Chicago who are equally attentive to details, unless I'm in a situation like this, I just can't, you know, be thinking that I can hop all over the US, drop in, do one day workshop and hop out and have enough people there to, you know, pay for the ticket and the hotel to do it. So that ended up being not a good idea, and it's too bad because I thought it was going to be a lot of fun, and I was really looking forward to going places that I normally can't reach with the digital story workshops. Now, does that mean that it's dead? No. It just means that until I find a better formula, a better way to do it, it is on hold, shall we say. Good idea. The Apple Photos Book for Photographers. So, this has been interesting, the whole Photos for Mac OS, because it's so interesting to me how people have emotional responses to software. And I've really noticed that with photos where I get these, I still get them. There was a tweet today, I think, from someone when I was talking about the Apple photo books, and he's going, well, you know, too bad the software is such a POS. And I'm just, you know, and then, you know, some other rant about it. And I'm just going, all right, it's software, first of all, okay? And second of all, it's not. So there's been this real uphill battle. What it is, it's different. It goes about things differently. It is not like Lightroom, it's not like Aperture, and it's not like Capture One Pro. It is different. They are trying something different, and they are developing it. And some folks like it and some folks don't. I've noticed that you know, in my case, younger photographers have no problem with it. Older photographers, you know, are comparing it to what they already know how to do and have some kind of negative view about it. It was an interesting thing for me to get involved in, because if software can be polarizing, this software is polarizing, and which is just weird to me in the first place, but that's the way it is. But I went ahead and did it because I saw the potential for this, just like I saw the potential in mirrorless when no one was talking about, just like I saw the potential in Aperture when it wasn't on anyone's radar. And I think I'm right again about photos. So I wrote the book, and the book just came out, as you guys know, because I mention it. And then I've done Lynda training about it. For a piece of software that so many people really discount, you know, it's my best-selling Lynda training. It's my most viewed Lynda training, and that includes more people watch it than watch my Capture One Pro training. There's got to be something there. And as it turned out, even though it's not you know, this big hit, the book nor the training or anything like that, it's hanging in there, and I think, you know, over time it's going to continue to grow and be a good long-term area for me to be teaching in. So I feel good about it. I think it was a good idea. I'm happy with the book. I think it's a great book. Rocky Nook just let me do it the way that I want, and I really appreciate that. And so I'm moving forward with photos, despite having aspersions cast against me and photos both for that association. Bad idea. Reinvent the wedding. Now, I talked a little bit about this last year, but I finally killed it this year. And so, you know, what I thought was, I closed down the site. And, you know, what I was thinking here, you know, I had done wedding photography for years. I felt like I was pretty good at it. I had good clientele before I stopped doing it. And I thought wedding photography, because of the changes in technology, you know, could be updated a little bit. And so I really tried to bring some innovation to wedding photography, you know, created a site around that, and really tried to make it something that I thought was in step with what was going on. Well, I could not have been more wrong about this. And the thing that I really learned about wedding photography was that people don't want to pay for it. I mean, you know, there's the high-end weddings, and people will pay thousands and thousands of dollars for those, and they'll get a big-name wedding photographer and, you know, all of that. But the folks that I was going after, you know, the everyday folks, you know, that are, you know, just making a living, they want it for free. And if not for free, then much less than most photographers can afford to do it, because weddings are a lot of work, and especially if you're doing this innovative stuff that I was trying to do, which is a lot of real-time feedback on the wedding itself while the event was still going on. That takes tools, and that takes people to do that. So I learned that that the wedding did not need to be reinvented. It just needed to be free. And I miscalculated on that big time. Too bad. I thought I could really do some neat stuff there, but I can't, because I need to charge for it. So anyway, Reinvent the Wedding was closed down mid-year this year, and we shall speak of it no more. Good idea. Patreon in the inner circle. And I'm happy with how this is going, and in part because I love this podcast. I think this podcast is, you know, one of the better things that I do every week. It's always a challenge to keep it going because, you know, we do everything ourselves. We build our own site. We serve the podcast. I do all the engineering on it from soup to nuts. And I have an admin who helps me, you know, keep the site going, because all sorts of weird things happen when you run a website. And there are external forces always trying to bring it down and all that good stuff. And I have always just wanted to keep this podcast going because it continues to grow and flourish and attract new people. But at the same time, ad sales and sponsors and all that stuff become hard to come by. And it's interesting, sponsors that were approaching me were not a good fit for this show, in all honesty. I'm not going to take on a sponsor and talk about men's underwear. You know, it's just not going to do it. And I don't want to be in the position where I have to do that. Or sponsors that, you know, they really wanted me to change how the show was done in order to accommodate their sponsorship. And so I was really, you know, going, well, how am I going to keep the show on the air and at the same time, you know, not just totally undermine it? You know, we had been talking about Patreon off and on. And when I was in Chicago and hanging out with some of the other guys there, some of the other teachers, some of which podcast, Patreon came up again. And I said, you know what, I'm gonna give it a try, and we'll just see what happens. And what has happened is, so far, we're about 20% of our goal, you know, that I need. You know, that's starting it, I believe, in July I started it. 20% of our overall goal. We have over 50 patrons every month. Their credit card gets dinged for $5. And I realize that, you know, that's an important thing. That's no small thing, and I totally appreciate it. But what it's done is it's starting to build a foundation that allows me to continue to say no to bad sponsors, no to advertisers who want to intervene, and just no to bad business deals involved with this podcast. As such, I feel really good about it. And every step that we take in the right direction with Patreon, you know, is a step towards not only keeping the show on the air, but keeping it the way that I want to keep it on the air. So it gives me a chance also to thank everyone who is doing the Patreon thing right now. And, you know, let's keep it going. And, you know, let's keep this show for us and not for other people. Okay, bad idea related to this. Partnering with other podcast networks. I had two offers, I guess, for lack of a better term, to partner with other networks. And the idea being that when you go with a podcast network, your podcast is in there, then the network can sell advertising and attract sponsors based on more shows, right? And more people listening rather than just one show going it alone. That idea is appealing in the sense, it's also appealing in the sense of letting me focus on making the show and letting someone else focus on, you know, generating revenue for it. There's tempting things there. But as it turned out, like with so many things like this, the other people just don't care about your show as much as you do. And that they end up being a lot of compromises in order to be part of this group. And in all honesty, every time I've looked into this and then really started drilling down, the support, the financial support that's supposed to result from becoming a part of this, just doesn't materialize. At least not to the point where it'd be any more than I can do with you guys right now in what we're doing. And so then again, just like with the bad sponsor thing, you end up compromising your product for no gain. I've pretty much decided that I'm not going to be partnering with any podcast networks in the future unless they really allow me to keep the show the way that I want to keep it and unless they really deliver on their end of the bargain. As of 2016, I think I'm done with that one. Good idea. Increasing my photography assignments. And I, you know, just as I was looking at things, I was going, you start getting involved in all this other stuff, you know, trying to keep the boat afloat, and suddenly you're not shooting nearly as much as you should. And since I am a writer and I am a photographer, those two things are very important to everything else that I do. You know, they are, you know, the heart and the soul of everything else that I do. So if I'm not shooting enough, I'm not engaged in experiences, you know, that I can bring back to this show, that I can bring to my writing, that I can, you know, use in other ways. And then suddenly I'm just someone that's talking about photography instead of someone that's actually doing it. So I decided I need to shoot more. I brought in a little bit more commercial work, which I'm, you know, very happy to have. But the other thing that I did was I started the film project, which really forces me to go out and shoot. And it's interesting, the film project has created a tremendous amount of digital imagery too. And the reason why is because the system that I have for the film project is that when I shoot an analog shot, I also capture a digital version because I have a whole journaling system that I use to, you know, record the data and, you know, all the stuff to go along with the analog shot. And I have those shots. I have those digital shots. And so I've been using those digital shots for articles, for Instagram, for all sorts of stuff. And these are images that I would not have otherwise had I not engaged in this personal project called the film project. So it just reaffirms to me how important personal projects are for us as writers and photographers and artists so that we keep doing what we're supposed to be doing instead of getting distracted and pulled away by the other forces that are there because, you know, we're also trying to survive, make a living, and, you know, get our boys through college. That personal project, the film project, was a big thing in terms of getting me to shoot more, getting me out there. And it just has been a blessing because as I'm looking back on the catalog of images from that project now, because I'm at the 1 year mark right now, and I was just looking the other day, I have a whole Capture One catalog specifically for the film project. And I was just going through the 3-star shots that I have. And I'm going, I would not have had any of these shots. And there's a lot of them had I not engaged in this project, nor would I have had those experiences. And I can't even tell you how many articles and podcast stories and stuff has come out of that. So shooting more and taking on a personal project definitely was a good idea in 2016. The bad idea was looking for work using online services. And when I got the 1-2 punch with CT closing down and Rocky Nook not renewing my contract, I guess. When I got that 1-2 punch, I was going, oh God, you know, I need to replace that revenue. I've got a lot of things going on right now. So I definitely had the long-term projects, which are, you know, more mine. But, you know, I thought, well, I should look at some short-term revenue too. So I said, all right, let me take a look at what's happening online. Part-time jobs, listings on things like LinkedIn and so forth. LinkedIn has a whole job search component. And since I teach for Lynda, I have a LinkedIn account. I just started investigating those and, you know, all the different categories, writing, editing, social media, online marketing, all that stuff. And what I discovered, it was very fascinating, actually. It was a bad idea in me thinking that something was actually going to come of it. It was a mediocre idea in me learning, you know, a little bit about what's happening in that area right now. And what that market is looking for, at least as I interpret it and the hours that I spent investigating it, is that they're looking for people that they can get very cheap. Generally speaking, people that are, you know, at the front end of their career, hoping to get into online writing, photography, things like that. So people that are very cheap, people that, you know, will be an FTE, full-time employee, and really work for very little money. Experience doesn't seem to be a big requirement. I think they want the degree, but I mean, beyond that, they don't really need a lot of experience. And it was very sobering to see what, you know, companies that you know and I know, what they're looking for and, you know, what they're willing to pay. That was a bad idea, thinking that somehow I was going to, you know, shore things up by maybe spending some of my time doing this. And, you know, when I started doing the math on this, that if I just, as an entrepreneur, if I just came up with one decent idea that had a little bit of traction, it would probably benefit me more than working 6 months for one of these entities. I went ahead and closed that down, and I'm not checking out part-time or even full-time job market right now because it's not good. At least, okay, it's not good for me. That's what I'll say. Not good for me. I hope there were some nuggets in there for you. I think 2017, in all honesty, going to stay along those lines. I don't see any big positive changes in 2017. I think we're going to continue to have to, you know, work harder. A lot of us work harder for less, and just hang in there and see what happens up the road. I'm battle tested. 2016 definitely made me tougher, and I feel like I'm well armed going into 2017. In the news. So Lightroom gets an update. I got this from Scott Kelby's blog, Lightroom Killer Tips. There are two main new features in the December 2016 update. And I thought this would be a nice segue because I talked about updates last week and I referred to Lightroom, but you know, right after I did the show, of course, then this bigger update came out. And there's two things with the desktop version. Things now run faster, which is one of the things that I said in last week's show that Lightroom needs to do. It needs to run faster. And I haven't fully tested this yet. But with this update, this current update that's available to you right now if you're a Creative Cloud user, that the application definitely runs faster. According to Adobe, you should notice improvements in image editing responsiveness when background tasks such as preview generation are running, moving files between folders, running catalog backups, and things like that. So yay. I don't see anything in there about import, which I know is an area that also could use a little speeding up. So probably want to test that yourself. And then the second thing, they actually added a new feature, the ability to choose any image as a reference image, an image that you need to post-process to look like another image. So if you have one image that you've already worked on and then you know you're going to do a group of shots and you want this next one to look the same or to be processed the same way, then you can open an unprocessed image right beside it so that you can edit the photo live while using the other photo as a reference. It's nice. So you edit one image, you get it the way that you want, and then you've got a companion shot. So you can have the one that is the way that you want. You can put it there and have the companion shot next to it, and then you can edit the companion shot while still looking at the reference image. And so that it ends up, you know, looking like they belong together. I think that's kind of cool. And I took a look at it and haven't gone in depth with it, but I do think it's a good idea. So that is a nice update, especially if the speed performance is really true. And then they updated Lightroom Mobile too and worked on its interface and stuff. So some nice stuff. If you're a Lightroom user, make sure that you're using the current version. I had to go to my Creative Cloud account and tell it to update Lightroom for me, which it did. And then I'm going to be playing with the new version of Lightroom Mobile this week, and I'm looking forward to those interface changes also. I have three recipients for the signed copy of the Apple's Photo Book for Photographers. So those of you that gave me a shout out on Twitter for the book, I really appreciate it. It was fun. It was fun. And we had a nice turnout. And so we randomly picked three of you from that group. And the first one is Scott Katzenoff, Mark Malter, and John Davis. So Scott Katzenoff, Mark Malter, and John Davis, congratulations. You'll be getting an email and I'll get your address and we'll send you a signed copy of the Apple's Photo Book for Photographers. Much appreciated. Thank you so much for the shout outs and thank you everyone for shouting out. And we're going to do another something like this in another week or so. So if you didn't score this time, stay tuned. You're going to get another whack at it. Just a few updates here. So I'm working on the 2007 TDS workshops. And those of you that were on the reserve list for the San Francisco workshop, you should have received your invite to register for the workshop. So if you don't have that in your inbox and you think you're on the reserve list, make sure you send me an email. We've already had a sign-up, so I know the registration system is working. I modernized that a little bit. I worked on that a little bit for this year because I wanted that to be smoother and easier for you, and it looks like it's rolling fine. We're still getting additional names for the reserve list for all the workshops. You should get a note from me, And if you haven't received a note from me after you signed up to reserve list, make sure you let me know or go ahead and use the send me info tool again. And I'll make sure that I get you on the reserve list. We're going to have a great workshop season in 2017. I'm super excited about it. I'm glad that we're rolling along on it. Finally, I want to mention the good folks over at Red River Paper who are standing by us. You know, when I mentioned good sponsors, bad sponsors, and all that, Red River Paper falls into the absolute great sponsor category. They support us. They don't interfere with our show. You know, they're here for us to have the show that the way that we want. And all they ask is that, you know, I continue to let you know that I think Red River Paper is the best value and the best printing paper for the money on the market, and that I think they're a fantastic company to work with. And that's all they ask of us. And I just think that that's fantastic. I love these guys, and I appreciate their support all through 2016. And I hope, in turn, that you are considering them every time you think about inkjet printing. And if you haven't been thinking about inkjet printing, do. It's fun. It's fun to create art. And they have so many great surfaces and so many great paper stocks to choose from that you can create exactly the kind of art that you want. So big thanks to Red River Paper. I wish all the sponsors on the planet were as cool as these guys. If they did, I think podcasting would be flourishing even more. All right, so that's it for this week. I'm recording this, by the way, if you haven't been able to tell, I'm recording this from Huntington Beach, California. I'm visiting my family down here, having a great time. I always like being in Southern California in the winter months. And I have a stack of pillows on one of the guest bedrooms and my little recording device. And believe me, no matter where I am, the show will go on. All right. Until next week, when I will be back in the studio, have a great week, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye now.